Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm Dee.
You what?
Said I'm Dee.
Oh, okay. Well, she's also the dive mistress, so let's go with that.
I'm gonna change over to Dee. This is supposed to be a seamless transition.
Well, in order to keep the seams from showing, you have to tell me about them. So I can help cover them up.
Oh, all right. Okay, next time.
Next time. All right, so we're here to talk about movies.
Yes.
And be thrown off really, really badly. So yeah. that would be the two things we're here to do.
I'd also like to say today we're very pleased to have two guests with us. We've got Anonymous, who's joined us again, and we have Pinko Mitten, who's also in the studio today.
That's the name she went with?
Pinko Mittens, that's her name.
All right. I guess I'm okay with that.
You don't have a choice.
Excellent point. All right, so first off, do we have any random crap on this beautiful summer's evening?
Yes, we do. First bit of random crap. I spent the afternoon at a winery.
I'm not surprised by that.
No one should be. And it's a local winery. It's a new place called Coffin Ridge. And they've actually adopted this sort of dark goth theme for their vineyard.
Wow.
And it's really cool. Yeah, so the banting or whatever the mesh is called. The mesh is, it's black. And usually that stuff is sort of green, but they've got sort of this black banting. And the place is all done up in black and red, and the inside of the tasting space is sort of grays, and they have this coffin motif throughout the building.
That sounds kind of neat, actually. I mean, I was going to be extra sarcastic because I feel you deserve it, but you know what? Yeah.
And the real kicker, I mean, the labels on the bottle, they say, you know, here lies, and then the name of the wine, and then born, which is sort of the date that the grape was harvested, or the year in which the grapes were harvested. And you can buy special gift boxes of their wine, which are coffin-shaped.
Wow. They might be taking this a little too far, but...
Oh, it's awesome! It's so cool!
Okay. I'm not going to try to argue with that, so...
And the wine is friggin' amazing!
As I'm sure our listener can tell.
I'm telling you, we had a great time.
Yes. All right.
You don't care.
I do care. Who loves wine more than me? Is it everyone? It might be everyone. Might have gotten that backwards, and it's everyone who loves wine more than me. All right. But that is fantastic. I'm very happy you had a great day. Hopefully that didn't sound too sarcastic.
Not too sarcastic enough.
I never am. Okay, so let's move right along to...
more random crap.
I was letting you go there. But
thanks.
You're welcome.
I just saw the Spider-Man trailer, I believe, was released this week. It might have been last week. It doesn't matter. I just saw the Spider-Man trailer for the new Spider-Man movie.
Yeah,
not impressed at all. A lot like the Batman trailer, I thought it was a bit of a disappointment. It's a sort of a re-envisioning of Spider-Man.
I've got to ask, is this the first-person running trailer?
Well, not running, but like swinging through the...
Bounding through the rooftops, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, really?
So, funny story. Have you heard on the internet what it was largely ripped off of?
No.
There's a video game called Mirror's Edge about parkour.
Okay.
And there was a trailer for the video game, and you can find comparisons on YouTube. I guess I'll try and find one for the show notes. Yeah. And basically, the trailer, how long is the trailer, like 90 seconds?
Maybe.
Yeah, the video game trailer was a little shorter than that, but basically many shots from the movie trailer were straight out of the video game trailer, and someone has cut the two of them together side by side to be like, yeah, it's not even slightly original.
Oh, God. Well, the thing is, like, the whole first person web slinging sequence in the trailer, like, is this what it's going to be like in the movie? Like, it might look cool in 3D for a little while, and it just might get really irritating. Also, are you just covering up for the fact that your CG is just as shit as it was for the original film? You're incapable of doing anything better.
Yeah, God forbid they just get a stuntman in a costume and let him be Spider-Man.
So, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a fan. I don't like Spider-Man.
I haven't seen Spider-Man 3.
The 90s, and that was awesome, but I wasn't a fan of the films, and I don't think I'm going to be a fan of these. I've already made my decision. I'm not going to like the new Spider-Man.
Yeah, the weird part is the Spider-Man movies, I've seen each. The first two I saw in theaters. That's the only time I've seen those two movies, and I never saw the third one.
Oh, yeah.
And I was told that it was for the best that I not see the third one.
Yes, absolutely for the best.
Although, to be fair, I feel like I've seen it because at one time, like, Merman spent 3 hours explaining to me everything wrong with the movie. So I was kind of impressed by that, actually.
Well, yeah, so now, you know, it's kind of like you did see it, I guess.
Oh, no, it is. I've almost seen the movie because I know everything that's wrong with it. Same way I feel about Transformers 2. Like, I know everything wrong with Transformers 2. I just haven't seen it. All right, so moving on to my random crap. I just wanted to point out that we all remember what a huge disappointment the Green Lantern movie was. Just a giant disaster. And I'm just going to say that the Green Lantern video game, which I've recently started playing, way better at capturing the Green Lantern spirit than the Green Lantern movie.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
I just find it weird that it's the official movie of the game. Thanks. The official game of the movie. And Ryan Reynolds does the voice and it's his image and all that, but it's just way better content-wise than the movie was, which is very strange.
Completely different group of people make the game than make the movie.
No, and they're clearly people who cared more.
Yeah, or who knew what they were doing, even.
Yes, who were competent.
Yeah.
I just find it weird that they clearly care so much more than the people making the $190 million movie did.
Oh, God.
But what are you going to do? All right, so I think that's it for random crap. We are ready.
No, you have more random crap.
Do? Did we just add some random crap?
No, we talked about this like 10 minutes ago.
Oh, God. I'm an embarrassing buffoon. Yeah. Now and then I check.
I've been drinking all afternoon.
No, I don't even have an excuse. I often neglect to check the keywords that lead people to Castle Vargelon because, well, I was traumatized by the time I got, you know, seen in American movie where arrow pierces breast.
What?
Yeah, that was a real search that led someone to my review of Wrong Turn 3.
Tells me that she's seen that movie.
Yes, Wrong Turn 3. You've seen it too, haven't you?
Oh, Wrong Turn. Oh, no, she's thinking of something else. Never mind. Ignore her.
Apparently that happens a lot in movies, and I just didn't know. But anyway, I've been very loath to check my search keywords. But on the upside, I just swung by there today, just, you know, out of morbid curiosity. And A, I'm glad that my article, Who Was the Killer in Chain Letter, is still, you know, getting people to my site. Because apparently a lot of people want to know who the killer in Chain Letter was, and the film was not good at explaining it.
Well, it's virtually impossible to figure that out from watching the movie.
That's absolutely true. I had to do a lot of research to noodle that one. But below that was like, I don't know how this search got people to my site, and I hope they didn't stay. Because here is the search that got 3 people to my website. BTK crime scene photos.
What? Are you serious?
I am completely serious. That was an actual Google search that got 3, maybe it was the same person 3 times, although why you would come back after you find out that I didn't have any, I don't know.
Have you ever blogged about BTK?
There was a fake BTK killer on an episode of Criminal Minds, so he got mentioned, but I still don't know why people would see my site with BTK crime scene photos.
Well, I don't know why people would want to Google that to begin with. Well, I suppose I do know. I just don't want to think about it.
Yes, you do know. You would just prefer to live in a world where you didn't.
Yeah.
All right, so that was my weird day.
Okay,
I think we're ready to move on to our first move of the evening, Dive Mistress.
Yep. Our first move of the evening is Silver Bullet. And this is a film adaptation of Stephen King's Cycle of the Werewolf. So here we go, synopsis. Silver Bullet. Over the course of, I'm going to guess, 5 or 6 months, a maniac terrorizes a small town. Only Corey Haim knows the truth. The maniac is really a werewolf. After a chance encounter with a beast one night, Corey Haim wounds the monster and is able to identify it in human form. But now the werewolf knows he knows, and it's only a matter of time before the beast comes for him.
Okay. I gotta say, that's better synopsis than I would have done. I would have focused largely on the appearance of Terry O'Quinn in the movie.
Well, here's the thing, Silver Bullet. So I saw the name Terry O'Quinn in the opening credits. I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And it took me a minute to actually, like, realize who it was in the film. But even worse, for the entire length of the movie, I'm trying to figure out who this one guy is, because I've seen him before and it's driving me nuts. And then finally, once the film is over, I put it together, Everett McGill.
Yeah, from Twin Peaks.
Who's in People Under the Stairs.
And People Under the Stairs, obviously.
That's how I know him, People Under the Stairs. And it was driving me crazy.
Wow. Yeah, he plays the bad guy a lot. And one hilarious story.
Give it away.
No, I'm
just... You just ruined the movie for everyone.
He did not ruin the movie. I didn't say he was the bad guy in this. I said he plays the bad guy a lot. Although...
I need that viewer to conclude that he is the bad guy in this film.
Well, I gotta say, the film does kind of give it away early on. in a weird dream sequence when the movie abruptly shifts who it's telling the point of view from.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and that's, in fact... Whose point of view this movie is being told from is a very, very good question.
Yeah. I didn't really bother myself too much with that. It's really more the passage of time that I had a problem with.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to tell when this movie is taking place at any given moment.
Because it begins at the beginning of summer.
Yeah.
And it ends, I think, sometime in the fall?
Yeah.
Also, Gary Busey is in it.
And Gary Busey is wonderful in it.
Yeah, because he hasn't gone, like, completely crazy yet.
No, it's weird. It's so sad watching a movie like this, and you're like, wow, he just used to be a really reliable character actor.
Yeah, and then he went off the deep end.
Weirdly, because I've been rewatching Millennium, I just kept thinking about it because, A, Terry O'Quinn, who's fantastic.
Yeah, sans mustache.
Sans mustache, yeah, which is great, but still. Terry O'Quinn, pre-mustache, if you will. pre-mustache. And the thing that I loved about it is that also there's a wonderful episode of Millennium when Frank is interviewing a serial killer in jail. And he says that who's been in jail for like a decade. If they make a movie about my life, I want Gary Busey to play me. Is he still popular?
Nice.
And I'm like, oh, that's nice. No, but I gotta say, I've not read the story this is based on. Have you?
Yeah.
Okay, and how faithful is this? Like,
well, I read it a long time ago, and I remember it's a novella, or I think they call it a novelette.
So it's shorter than a novella?
I guess, I don't know. Anyway, there's a disclaimer at the beginning of the book where it says that, you know, Stephen King is aware, has taken great liberties with the calendar, because in Cycle of the Werewolf, all the full moons coincide with holidays during each month.
Oh.
And so he's like, I understand how that cycle works. And
actually be one on both Halloween and the 4th of July. Yeah. But shut up. I'm writing a book.
Yeah, and so this movie doesn't follow that, and I was waiting for it to happen, but that just doesn't come to pass in the film.
Yeah,
I don't recall anything else about the story,
okay,
including whether or not Corey Haim's character is actually in a wheelchair.
Oh, okay. I actually thought it was kind of funny in the the story in the movie that Stephen King wrote his way around that by saying maybe he's just a worse werewolf at the full moon and he's a werewolf all the time.
What do you mean a worse werewolf?
That's what he says. It's like maybe
like, werewolf like
all the time.
He's bad at being a werewolf? Or
he's a more extreme version of a werewolf. He goes from just a regular murdering werewolf to the kind who busts through a wall, okay?
Oh, I see. Okay.
All right. So thank you. No, but I just like that he tried to fix that. Although, I gotta say, I became such a horror nerd when they started talking about the mythology of the werewolf.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, first off, it isn't just the moon that was made up by the movie The Wolfman. It's the silver thing, too, you know? Like, all of the myths of the werewolf do not agree on silver killing them. That was made up by a movie.
Right.
And that's why I'm just a super horror nerd, and it bugged me. And I'm like, you should know that, Stephen King. You're supposed to be so good at horror.
The movie's called Silver Bullet.
No, I don't disagree with the fact that he had to be shot with a silver bullet. But, you know, I disagree with them saying that there's some kind of a general agreement in mythology.
That doesn't bother me. Okay. I don't care. Because most people, there is a general agreement in mythology that a silver bullet will kill a werewolf.
Oh, there's a general agreement in popular fiction since the year 1931, not a general agreement in mythology. You can't call that mythology.
Well, why not?
Because it's not a myth, it's just a story.
Well, there isn't really a werewolf mythology anyway.
What are you talking about? Of course there is. Werewolves have, you know, existed and people have thought they were real for hundreds and hundreds of years.
What are you talking about, lycanthropy?
Yes.
Like the psychological disorder?
I'm talking
about the actual people changing into werewolves.
I'm saying that people throughout history, I'm not saying there are real werewolves. Okay, for the record, I am not saying there are real werewolves, okay? let's just put the kibosh on that one right now. You're not going to get me to say that there are real werewolves. But, throughout history since like the 16th century, people throughout Europe have been sure that werewolves are real, and no one is sure what happened in France that one time.
What?
You know what I'm talking about? The movie Brotherhood of the Wolf. There was a werewolf in France. A bunch of people tried to kill it. They couldn't. They had to murder it with, you know, elaborate weapons that they brought from the capital. Then they buried it under a church so it wouldn't come back from the dead. That's a thing that really happened. I'm not saying it was actually a werewolf. I'm saying, according to historical documents at the time, it was a werewolf.
Wow,
I just got, I went really deep down the werewolf well there, didn't I?
Yeah.
All right. Hey!
To claw yourself out.
Okay, when does this movie stop talking about, when did this movie stop being about how a town reacts to a tragedy? Because,
never about that.
It does seem to be at one point about, like, a whole community under stress and suspicion and all that, and then suddenly it zeroes in its focus.
Well, no, you just return to the bar where there's that one rabble-rouser.
Yeah.
But that's not really, that's not really the focus of the movie, the way the town deals with the tragedy. I think that's just one guy creating conflict within the story.
It's possible. I gotta say, I was confused about just what degree the werewolf in this movie was covering up for himself. Because,
to no degree.
Well, no, but they say to no degree, but then they say the first guy, they thought it was an accident and that a train had run over his neck, right? But the guy died on the rail 50 feet down from where his rail checking cart was parked.
No, I saw that, and it's a discrepancy, I think, probably just in the, like, perhaps a discrepancy in the way the film was shot, but it might also just be it's a terrible accident, you know, extreme violence took place, the guy's head was decapitated, and the logical conclusion is that he was hit by a train and decapitated. No one in their right mind is going to immediately jump to, oh my god, a werewolf killed him.
I'm not saying they should have jumped to werewolf, I'm saying how could a train have come by if his cart was on the tracks? That's why I was asking, like, did the werewolf go and remove that cart afterwards?
No, he might have been on a different track.
No, but he wasn't. We saw where he got killed, and there was only one track.
I don't know. I really... You're overthinking that.
You're right. I may be overthinking this film. Okay. Loved the transformation. There. I thought the werewolf transformation was fantastic.
Yeah, that was well done.
It was very well done. It may not have been American Werewolf in London. It may have been done on the cheap, but I thought it was really just pretty great looking.
No, for what it was, yeah.
And it was very restrained for a Stephen King movie.
What do you mean restrained?
I think of Stephen King movies as being kind of crazy and over the top these days. But it's very...
Like 1984.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's like there used to be a very different kind of Stephen King movie that we have stopped thinking of. And I like the way it was just very simply focused on that family. And I know he writes a lot about families, and he writes a lot about people with stress in their life crumbling as a microcosm for monsters. And then, of course, there was that terrible movie Secret Window. But I got to say, I liked how quiet and small and classy this movie was.
Okay.
And it made me sad that even if I didn't think it was the greatest werewolf movie ever, which it isn't, I was happy to see a horror movie that was quiet and took its time.
Yeah, that was okay. I'm not like a huge, huge fan. I generally don't like werewolf movies really to begin with. Like, it's just not. It's just not a subsection of the horror genre or like the movie monster. I don't know, category, I guess, that I really like all that much.
Right.
But for what it was, I mean, it's, you know, I enjoyed it. It was a good film. Everett McGill's in it.
Everett McGill, who, my favorite Everett McGill story is that J. Michael Straczynski saw him in a restaurant, and they had, like, met once or twice, and he's like, hey, do you want to do an episode of Babylon 5? Because I got a part for you in a couple of months. It would be perfect. And Everett McGill's like, sure, absolutely. You know, I think your show's fine. And so it came time to cast that part. And then J. Michael Straczynski was like, oh God, I was supposed to give this part to somebody. Who was it? Oh, you know, what's his name? McGill. And so his casting director was like, Bruce McGill? And like, yeah, that's it.
And oh, so shit.
So they hired Bruce McGill for the part.
Oh, poor Everett.
It was very sad for him. No, but he was great as always in this. He was very, I mean, okay, spoiler alert, he's the werewolf, and he was creepy as sin.
We already spoiled it. Pay attention.
I was just re-spoiling it. I just thought I really was impressed by how super creepy he was.
Boy, he's good at being creepy. People on the stairs, hello.
Yeah, I know, that was one of the all-time great creep-out performances.
Yeah, especially when he's dressed in that black leather.
I know. Oh, God, him in his gimp suit charging around the house with a shotgun. Oh, God, I love that movie. And we should find some excuse to cover that as part of a themed show.
We don't need an excuse.
No, but I'm just saying, we need a themed show where it fits in.
No, we don't. We just watch it and talk about it.
Okay, you win. We're just going to do that. All right, so can we move on to our next film? A film that I forced you to watch, and I'm willing to take my knocks now for it.
Oh, my God. I just...
Apparently you didn't watch it alone.
No. For the record, I was...
In that case, I will apologize to everyone.
Yeah, we want our time back for this one. Our second movie of the evening is In Search of Lovecraft. An aspiring investigative journalist feels that her talent is wasted covering the Halloween celebrations. But an interview with a Lovecraft expert offers an opportunity to pursue a story about cultish activities and ancient evils. She'd be stupid not to follow this lead.
Sorry, it's just... This movie makes me laugh so hard.
Oh, this movie made us groan and yell at the television.
It's so bad.
It drove us to drink.
Oh, yeah, like you needed to be driven.
Oh, my God. Like, so how do you know where to start with this? Okay, actually, no, I take
you
that
You do
back.
Know where to start. Of course you know where to start.
Okay. The film begins as, like, an in-camera... you know, first-person point-of-view movie when you watch the film through the lens of the video camera that's taping the investigative journalist. I think Rebecca is her name.
Yeah, Rebecca Marsh.
And then occasionally you see the cameraman, Mike.
Yeah.
Who's got, like, the worst pants you've ever seen on a man.
He said, the weird part is they're so bad that I actually noticed them. I never noticed costumes, but the first time he walked in front of camera, I'm like, what is he wearing?
But then, partway through the film, it completely abandons that conceit and becomes just a regular movie told from the sort of third-person point of view. Never mind the fact that, while we're still in the, you know, first-person part of the film, we still get cut-ins that would suggest that the film isn't first person in camera, and it's just like, what is going on?
And the film goes to so much trouble to be all real footage for the first 30 minutes, then like two cut-ins happen, you're like, wait, what, did he, a guy puts down the camera and runs after someone, and then they do a weird first person cut-in, but it's not clearly not from the point of view of a camera, because they're like, he left the camera. What's happening here? And then you realize, oh my God, they just realized it would be too hard to do the rest of the movie that way. So they gave up.
And it's just, it's also the, so you have that. That's one problem with the film. You have the investigative journalist, this woman, Rebecca, who's been on the job exactly like, I don't know, 4 months.
Yeah.
Who refuses, she flat out, she makes it very clear that she doesn't want to do fluff journalism. She wants to be a hardcore investigative journalist. So she has to cover the Halloween celebration. Fine. You know what? You fucking deal with it. You just got this goddamn job. You have to prove to your producer and your boss that you can
By
be
the way,
professional.
Her boss, some of the greatest one-take acting you'll ever see.
Meanwhile, so she sort of stumbles upon, you know, this weird, you know, sort of Lovecraftian culture stuff with Nyarlathotep. Pinko Mittens has corrected my pronunciation of the name. And still, she doesn't believe what she's hearing. She doesn't want to investigate this story. She wants to do something else. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, you're self-sabotaging your own career. You want to be an investigative journalist? You have a perfect opportunity to investigate some weird-ass cult.
I know.
And you won't follow up on this?
And you're very pissy about it. Like, you're too, like, good to investigate a cult.
She's, like, rolling her eyes at the camera. She's unprofessional in the interview that she's conducting.
I know.
Why are you resisting? This is gold. This is your bread and butter.
I know. And yet, oh my God. And what was the, there was something else that really bugged me. Well, everything really bugged me, I guess. But the thing that I guess really bugged me about this movie was the just ungodly bad, well, not just the ungodly bad acting, but the fact that it opens with her really, like, the actress really went to a Halloween march.
It's shot in San Francisco, and they actually shot it
during their big Halloween parade.
Celebration, yeah.
Right? And the hilarious part is, and this is how, like, poorly thought out the writing of this movie was, that it opens with her getting footage at the Halloween festival, and then for the rest of the movie, she's like, oh, I'm so pissed off to be having to do this Halloween story. And then someone apparently pointed out, you know, Halloween's already over. So they have her at one scene talking to the boss. It's like, this story doesn't even have to be aired for a year.
Like,
yeah. Why are you shooting a story a year in advance? And, of course, the answer is, late in the movie, someone had the idea of, oh, we should get some real-life footage of the Halloween festival, and then that person realized it completely screwed up the film's timeline, so they had to explain it away in a completely nonsensical manner.
I don't know. Part of it really feels like they just kind of made it up as they went along, because at one point, they have to, like, searching for the stone. So the movie is based on The Crawling Chaos and I think Beneath the Ruin. No, Beneath the Ruins? Under the Pyramids.
Yeah.
I don't know. Beneath the Pyramids. I don't know why they didn't go with Cthulhu with this one, but no. They went another way.
Grab the one whose name is much harder to say. Thanks.
Yeah. And that no one can pronounce. So at one point they have to like go to some house where they're hoping to find clues to lead them to a stone, except they spend 20 minutes hanging out in this house. Nothing happens.
By the way, that's 20 minutes of movie time. Three days of movie time where they don't like search at all. They just kind of looking.
At one point, they decide they're going to look through the house. They don't find any clues to lead them to the location of the stone. And then they realize too late, oh shit, the world's going to end in an hour. Like, what? And then there's an epic battle that's supposed to take place. But all you see are two women standing on a drop cloth for 10 minutes.
Oh,
moan off camera. Oh.
And let's not overlook the fact that I'm not saying, you know, it's fine to want to rip off Ghostbusters. Everybody loves ripping off Ghostbusters. But, you know, these are people living in the modern day. If you find out the cult leader was an architect who built lots of big things, wouldn't the big things that he built be the logical first place to check?
Oh, yeah. Also, if you're going to rip off Ghostbusters and have an evil architect, you have to name him Evo Shandor.
Yeah, I know. That was kind of inexplicable why they didn't do that. Evo Shandor.
Or whatever it was. Rothman? Redman.
Yeah. Redman, yeah. And he performed a lot of unnecessary surgery. Oh, it is one of the best lines ever, if not the best line ever. But yeah, like, and what really puzzled me about this movie is just how, like, it's not a long movie. But God, does it take...
But
that's what I'm saying. It's not a long movie, but God, did it take its time.
It took years off my life.
But the thing that I found so funny about it was this is like, I'm not saying this is a an epidemic of this happening, but... We have now seen three movies where the house that the film crew is able to get is completely wrong temporally for the house it's supposed to be.
Oh, yeah, totally inappropriate for this film. Never mind the fact that this house is supposed to have only two rooms.
I know.
And the people just up and left, and left behind, they're like, I don't know, $4,000 computer.
No, but it's like, because in Gacy House, we had a house that was way too old. And in this, in Paranoid Activity, we have houses that are way too new. Like, do you see the floor of this house? Oh my God. It's not even slightly accurate. And then, I gotta say, here's my question to you. Found footage is always a fun thing to do, okay? I like found footage. You like found footage. Is there anything creepier than people finding, like, the film strip from a lost expedition?
No, that's awesome.
But I have a question for you. So, in that footage from the lost expedition, in the year, what, 1931?
Yeah.
Who was recording the sound?
I know. I thought of that, too. I'm like, that camera does, that film doesn't have sound.
Can't film, like, do you know how long it would be before cameras would have sound?
I know. I let that one go.
Who developed it?
I let it slide.
Okay.
I was willing to overlook that.
Generous than I, obviously.
What I'm not willing to overlook, however, is the woman in the film from the 30s.
Yeah.
Has a granddaughter in the present day who's at least 45.
Yeah.
Like, the timing is just, I'm not very good at math, but I know that doesn't make any sense.
No, that was pretty way off. Also, I have rarely seen, it's the hard part in an H.P. Lovecraft-related story to say, he read the book. And then he went insane. Or he saw the monster and then he went insane. Because when you do it in a movie, well, we're going to want to know what's in the book, or we're going to want to see the monster, but we're not going to go insane. And then, because we saw this woman who went irreversibly mad by seeing this film strip, and then we see the film strip, and no, that's just somebody getting killed.
No, there's nothing on it.
Nothing really on it. Not really sure why she went nuts. I mean, you know, it seems just weird that you would have thought that would make you upset. Like, okay, seeing your granddad get murdered, sure, maybe it's a little creepy, but, you know, it's not going full tilt mad creepy.
Right.
Yeah, so let's just say there was a lot of problems with In Search of Lovecraft, and I will, in the future, force you less to watch literally any movie that has the word Lovecraft in the title.
Well, like, this is an important lesson for me to learn. There are two good Lovecraft movies.
Which are?
Reanimator and Call of Cthulhu. Any other movie based on Lovecraft sucks.
I kind of like In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah, but that movie's just so fucked up.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
You know, it's loosely based on Lovecraft. It isn't Lovecraft on film.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Okay. All right. I'll stop trying to claim that one. Although, I still say you could do Lovecraft well. It's just no one ever has.
Well, no. It's hard to do.
I'm not saying it's not hard to do. And I am saying you shouldn't just do Dagon every time. Not Dagon. Shadow over Innsmouth every time.
No, but you also shouldn't do Dagon.
Yeah, you just shouldn't do Dagon. Giant weird fish monster. It's just going to look strange. All right. So I think even though it's essentially free to watch on Netflix, unless you're an American, they've jacked up your prices. You should really not watch this movie. I think it's safe to say that it's not worth the 71 minutes it takes to watch.
Really? It was 71 minutes?
No, it wasn't 71 minutes. That was Paranoid Activity, but it was shorter than a real movie.
Oh, God.
Okay. I think we can move to our final film of the night, I'd say the most real film of the night. Take that, Silver Bullet.
Yes, our final film of the evening is Day Watch. In the sequel to Night Watch, the story between the light others and the dark others continues as the dark others scheme and plot in order to force a war between the two sides. Racked with guilt about his life choices, events that have brought the world to the brink of destruction, Anton searches for the chalk of fate in hopes of unmaking a terrible choice. I don't know why you're laughing.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking about something from the movie that I found hilarious, but it was intended as a joke. And I just want to say something about this movie. I have no idea how it took me this long to watch this movie. Like, it doesn't make sense. Because I saw this movie, the Night Watch.
What does it make sense? You waiting forever to see this, or the movie itself?
No, me waiting forever to see it.
Oh.
Because I saw Night Watch in theaters back in 2005.
Yeah, and it was amazing.
We loved that movie. Right? It was great. And it ended with a trailer for this movie, which had already been shot. And somehow it took me 6 years to get around to watching this movie.
I know. I remember being really excited to see Daywatch, and then it just kind of never happened.
Yeah, because I thought I was going to get to see it in theaters, and then it didn't get the wide release that Nightwatch did. And then video stores died. So I never got around to watching it.
This is a great film.
It's a great movie. Wow.
Pink Kittens. Two of us had a fantastic time watching this movie.
It's so good. And it makes me so sad that guy went on to make Wanted, because he deserves so much better.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the same guy.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Although from the visual, you know, from the visuals, you can probably tell that it made that he made Wanted. The funny part is, right, I was watching this movie, and there's a scene in this movie, and I don't know how much we want to give away, but there's an action scene in this movie where, for reasons I'm not going to get into, people are running away, and cars are exploding all around, and as someone who just sat in a theater watching Transformers 3, I'm like, oh my god, people running away and cars exploding doesn't have to look terrible. It can look awesome and be propulsive and dynamic.
Sorry. Action doesn't have to suck.
question doesn't have to suck. And hey, here's another question. Why is North America afraid of urban fantasy?
I don't know, because urban fantasy is awesome.
Like, urban fantasy, when mixed with a mid to high budget, is like the greatest thing you can have.
I know. I know.
Because don't get me wrong, I watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I know there's urban fantasy here, but that's a low-budget urban fantasy where it's just, oh, there's a guy in a mask, let's stab him. This is mid-budget urban fantasy, and when you start getting money to show magic on screen,
I don't think that Daywatch is mid-budget.
No, high budget. I'm saying mid-budget for North America. I'm sure it only costs like $70 million.
Oh, I have no idea how much it costs.
That was just a guesstimation, because, you know, it's Russia where life is cheap.
Here's something that's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah.
So the movie ends, and Pinko, Mittens, and I are like blown away by what we've just seen. And then I turn to her and I'm like, wow, this is going to sound horrible, but I have to say it out loud. I don't know the first thing about the Russian film industry. And I sort of felt this way after I saw Night Witch, but I never articulated these thoughts until now, that I'm actually like surprised to see something of this caliber come out of Russia, but that's only because I know nothing about it, and I am forced to kind of to think about Russia and the Russian film industry, you know, sort of through this filter or through this lens kind of a backwards country that doesn't know what they're doing because of the Americans.
Yep.
Okay, she's telling me something here. The budget was $4.2 million estimated.
That can't be true.
That's what it says.
That can't be true. This looks like a $70 million movie.
No, that's only because the Americans are wasteful with their movie budget.
Actually, that is true. They do throw money away. They are very spendthrift.
Yeah, but you see, like, every dollar is on screen.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, so anyway, I'm a jerk and an idiot.
For just having this con... Because the weird part is, if this had been a French movie, you would have no problem believing it could come out of France.
Yeah.
Because we know that the French can make awesome action movies and good special effects movies. But because it's Russian and you have this condescending view towards the Russian because of growing up with anti-Russian propaganda.
Yeah.
And we all grew up with massive anti-Russia propaganda, which is very weird.
You know, so I started seeing everything sort of through the filter of the Iron Curtain.
And that where they're all drunken hillbillies.
As it were. Even contemporary American film that has set in Russia or has a scene in Russia, it's an economically depressed neighborhood and it's snowing all the time.
It's a country that is made of the color gray. I think is the best way to put it, is the country that is made of gray. Except where the gray has rusted.
Yeah, but it's not like that at all, of course. I'm just being stupid.
I mean, this film, yes, does happen to take place in the dead of winter. By the way, as people who watch only, you know, American movies, it is so weird for it to see a movie that gets what winter is like.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Russia and Canada might share something in
common. Oh, no, absolutely. I just think it's very odd to see, because even our own movies, I don't see winter a lot.
I'm sure you do.
Not as much as I would like. And by the way, in the dead of summer, I gotta say, nothing looks more refreshing than that guy throwing a bunch of snow on his face.
That's true.
Watch that, and I'm just like, oh, I could really use some of that right now.
I could really go for a face plant in a snowbank right about now.
That's really good! Oh my god. And the thing is, like, I know that spoiling things is our brand, but I'm not gonna spoil the plot to this movie. You know?
This is a fantastic movie. If you haven't seen Night Watch, watch it tonight.
And then watch
Day Watch.
Well, because the thing is,
two of them.
Yeah, and we're not going to discuss the amazing film. We've given lip service to some of the effects, but it's a great continuation. It picks up, you know, pretty much where the last one left off. It's got some amazing set pieces. And God, I love that villain.
Zavulon, is that his name?
Yeah. Oh, isn't he great?
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's like the Russian Jigsaw.
Oh! He's like Tobin Bell, and he's amazing. Oh, yeah. The main character is good. I'd say, I mean, obviously, I can only detect acting so much when I don't speak the language. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from their ability to express things physically wise, I thought everyone did a great performance.
Well, here's the other thing, and I noticed this with Nightwatch as well, and it continues in Baywatch. The way they work the subtitles into the movie, it's like, the subtitles become a part of the film and it's part of the experience of watching the movie.
Yeah.
Is reading the subtitles because they work them into what's going on screen. They're not like, you know, kind of below the action. They're part of the action some of the time.
And the first movie, Nightwatch, the first part, was the first time I'd ever seen anyone do that.
I haven't seen it outside of these two films.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, yeah, okay, does it cost another $50,000 to do that? Maybe. But it's like the dividends you get from doing it. I don't understand why everyone doesn't do that.
Yeah. It's just one of the many things I love about these movies.
Yeah.
Are subtitles.
It is weird that subtitles are one of the things you love about the movie. I'm going to say that's a little weird, but I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, the subtitles are fantastic.
Yeah.
And I really, honestly, I wish there was a The Inquisition. I mean, I know they didn't make a third one. And I'm not saying that this film ends. I'm not going to spoil the ending, but I'm not saying like, oh, it ends on a cliffhanger and I'm angry there's not a second one. I'm not getting into how the film wraps up at all. Right? But I'm just saying that it kind of makes me wish there's another movie in this series because I love this world so much.
Well, it's based on a trilogy, so you can read the books.
Oh, there is a third book?
The third book is Twilight Watch.
Okay, I assumed it would be Inquisition because that's the third group, but whatever.
No, because it's their watches. So there's a Twilight Watch.
Which is the mid-ground between the day and the night.
So, I'm just saying.
No, okay. Well, you're right. It might be worth learning Russian to read the book.
They've been translated.
Oh, they've been translated. I was just being silly. No, but honestly, like, I can't recommend this highly enough. And what I love especially, and this is, I think, a hallmark of good non-North American movies, is the amount of credit it gives to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
In that they don't over-explain the rules of magic.
No, it just happens, and they got to go with it.
And it's like, but because they put you in this place, they make you understand the kind of world you're living in, so when people demonstrate magical abilities, you're like, no, okay, I believe he can do that, because you've shown me that this is a world where magic is really real, and things are pretty elastic. Like, when the head of the day, the Night Watch, does a thing that I'm not going to reveal.
Oh my god!
We hadn't seen it. It's not like in a movie where they have to, elaborately say, he was the only guy who knew how to stretch his arms really far. That's what he was famous for when he was in the army. And then, so later in the movie, you know you're going to see him stretch his arm really far.
Well, no, here's the thing, though. Because the two films I watch and Daywatch, they take place completely within the worlds of these two sides, the Light Others and the Dark Others. And you don't have, like in American films where you have some kind of, you know, urban fantasy or magical fantasy, or like Harry Potter, for instance, where you have a character who is transitioning from one world to the other and acts as the audience's guide. You don't get that with these films. You are completely immersed in that other world from the get-go, and you just got to go with it.
And that's what I love.
And they're not going to waste their time explaining their rules to you.
They got a lot of plot to get through in that 2 hours. And it's all wonderful.
Yeah. So.
No, but like I said, that one action set piece I was mentioning earlier was just a beautiful sight to behold.
I don't even know what you're talking about because you're so cryptic.
I know. Well, I just said there was a bunch of exploding.
Nobody. So. Okay.
You'll know the scene when you watch the movie, which you damn well better if you haven't already. Okay? Oh my god. But yeah, no, I can't say enough good about this movie. It makes me wish Wanted had been a better movie. It made me, like, and I see that if this guy is given a decent script to work with, oh my god, can he deliver one hell of an action movie?
Well, that's it, though. I mean, Wanted wasn't a very good script.
That was a terrible script, based on awful source material, you know, so it was bound to be a disaster, but he can give us coherent action, and so few people can give us coherent action. Even when he's cutting relatively quickly, you always have a good sense of place. And I want to say that it's good that you brought up Harry Potter, because the thing I wanted to say is about Nightwatch. This is one of the urban fantasy worlds in which I would least like to live. Like, and I don't mean as a magician. I know that I'm too boring a person to ever turn out to be one of the powered people. So whenever I'm watching these movies, I always think, what would it be like being a regular guy in these movies? Like, just a person in the real world?
A regular guy doesn't live in these worlds.
No, what I'm saying is, like, for example, in the Harry Potter world, even if the worst happens and Voldemort takes over, my life really isn't going to be affected at all. You know?
Yeah, it would. Voldemort would kill you.
But he doesn't seem to care about
this. He'd actually enslave you.
No, but he doesn't care about the human world at all. He just wants
charge. He does. You obviously weren't paying attention.
I was paying close enough. But I'm just saying, there are very little chance of me being killed by a supersonic walnut in the world of Harry Potter, is what I'm saying. So I'm just saying, Dark Watch, Night Watch, and Day Watch, it seems like it would suck to be a regular person in this world.
No, because I think you have that completely backwards. People in the regular world, the Night Watch and the Day Watch stuff hardly ever affects them, unless you happen to be victim of a vampire. A lot of this goes on without your knowledge.
No, but that's my point. In Harry Potter, nothing ever, like, there's no knowledge ever hitting the people of the world. Whereas this one, a lot of people get killed by vampires.
Well, not a lot. They have to have a license to kill people and all the rest of it. I truly believe that you have it backwards. Entirely
right.
Backwards.
Well, this can be a debate for another time. Right now, I think we have some narcissism to watch.
Do I have any narcissism to watch? I'm actually going to write up something about the winery I visited today. So do keep an eye on Zombots. I also recently finished reading a series of novels, and I posted a book report on that, the Fever series. So if you're looking for something to read.
Do you mean if you're looking for something to read, read your blog post about it or read the books?
Both. Okay. Read my blog post and then read the book.
Okay. All right, over at Castle Vargelon, you know, 7 days, seven things of new content. I'm continuing to watch Torchwood, which is just awful. And I don't know why the internet is being largely kind to it. But
because the internet loves Doctor Who and feels obliged to love Doctor Who spinoffs.
Yeah, maybe, but it's like, I love Doctor Who unreservedly as well, and I loved the last Torchwood miniseries, but this thing is like such a precipitous drop in quality that I have no idea how people can be giving it a pass. But I guess you're right, maybe people are just entirely giving it a pass based on, you know, people's love of Doctor Who. And I've got to say, like, seriously, this is a show where an evil pharmaceutical company is like, all right, we need somebody to be the face of our new program to sell painkillers to everyone on the planet and make the most money ever. Who's going to be the face of this advance? I know! The world's most famous child molester!
What?
That actually happens on this show. A child molester has become a famous media darling. Yeah, so
that are you being hyperbolic? Because
I don't. What do you mean? Like, what part of it would be hyperbole? He was on death row for molesting and murdering a child, and now he's a beloved.
You tend to, you know, overdo it a little bit.
I do. I do use hyperbole. You are right. In this case, I don't think hyperbole. There exists hyperbole enough. How wrong-headed this storyline is.
All right, I'm just making sure.
Okay. For once, I'm not the one who's making the mistake. It's Russell Davies this time. the way, it's like, if you ever want to know how much producers can affect the show they work on, this show is like entirely produced by the old production staff of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Kelly Manners and Skip Skulnick and Jane Espenson, like, are all there working on it, and it's still terrible.
Wow.
Yeah, like, there's no excuse for the show being just as bad as it is. All right, so...
Oh, that reminds me.
Go.
This should have been a random crowd, but I only just thought of it right now when you said Buffy.
Okay.
Cabin in the Woods has a release date.
It does? Yeah. When was it coming? When's it coming out?
Next April.
What?
Yeah.
It's coming out 4 years late?
I'm just telling you what I read on the internet.
That doesn't make... Why not October? Why not for Halloween? There's no Saw movie coming out.
I don't have answers for you. I don't know.
Is it, but, okay, is my theory right? Have they D3D'd it again?
I think so.
Because that would be hilarious.
D3D'd it. Yeah.
If they're like, let's do the re-3D thing. That's going to be a huge hit with My Soul to Take. And we all saw how that worked out. And now 3D, nobody cares about 3D anymore, so they had to remove it. Oh, my God. So you're saying we have to wait, I'm just doing some mental math here, which should be a lot easier to do, by the way, 9 more months?
This is what I'm saying.
Oh my Christ. Wow, that is bad. Okay, well, thank you for bringing me down at the end of the show instead of the beginning. Appreciate that. All right, so I guess that's that. If you'd like to hear more from me, Vargelon.com.
If you'd like to hear more from me, Zomboss.net.
I'm so happy I got a cheer.
Send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. Visit the blog at theavod.blogspot.com. Vote in the poll. I've got poll results for last week. What are they? Last week's poll was, can a sequel be so bad that it goes back in time and ruins the original film? The answer was no, but a franchise can be so bad that it completely destroys the first film in theory.
Okay, see, that's good. I actually like the sound of that.
More than one movie, you need a number of awful sequels.
Actually, too. You know what? I think that point is dead on, because if you look at Saw, Saw 2 didn't destroy Saw 1, but Saw 3s through 7 really did.
So there you go. That's the answer.
All right, well, thank you very much, and I look forward to your comments on our new poll, our viewer. Yes. So, as always, I'm going to thank you for watching, and until next time, I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm the
Dive Mistress, and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.
You're completely leaving in the applause.